Well, just want to first off extend a huge gratitude to this church. Last year, I had the privilege of being honored for 20 years of serving in YWAM, and they had a special honoring night, and it was really cool. Just never been honored like that before, you know, just having a whole evening and celebration deal. But it was really cool because I have a family, and my son, oldest son, is 15 years old, and we have a child who's 10 and another child who's 5, and so we're highlighting all the milestones of YWAM, you know, with 5, 10, 15, and 20 years. And it was so cool to get up there and to be honored for 20 years, but to have my children be honored for their contribution in the mission as well. And it just is really sweet and really special because we've always said that God calls a family. It's something we totally believe. We do not feel that the call is my wife and I's and our children are just having to suffer the gospel because mom and dad said yes, and they get to inherit the richness and the fullness of the call of God. And it might mess with your theology a little bit, but trust me, it's good to understand that God calls the family and not just the individual. So I want to just share with you this morning. So sorry, I wanted to stop because when we were celebrating our 20 years, I sat there and I thought, wow, just so incredible to think of how I've been able to stay as a missionary, not taking a salary, just trusting God and watching the body of Christ respond to the heart of God, respond to what he said to us, and for people just to be sacrificially giving. I mean, sometimes people have given and we don't know where or why or how it ended up in our bank account, but it was just the right season, the right time. Yeah, we could be here for a long time just telling the miracles of the stories. And so the reason I'm sharing this is a lot of you have had a huge part of it. And, the church supports us so faithfully, and we're just incredibly grateful. So I wanted to first off extend that because I was so humbled, like I said, last year, 20 years. It's just like, whoa, I don't feel like I'm that old. I don't look that old, I don't think. Jody, stop shaking your head. it's just really awesome. And it's awesome this church has gone through so many transitions and, you know, some familiar faces and a lot of brand new faces. But this is part of the legacy of the church. And it's what God's been doing for many years. And I come back to Pagosa and I marvel at how many people have gone from such a small community to the nations. And it's definitely something that God has been orchestrating. It's not in the water, although it smells funny here. It's not in the water. It's what the Spirit of God is doing in the area. And so I want to give a little bit of a, you could throw up that first slide there. Yes. So my wife and I, last year, we were in the middle of transitioning. For those of you who, there are a lot of unfamiliar faces. So in 1999, I started off with YWAM, and it's taken us many places. We were in Australia for a little while, and then in 2001, moved to Turkey and served there for 6 years with YWAM, doing all kinds of youth discipleship and Bible distribution evangelism. And then we moved in 2008 to go pioneer a YWAM base in the Whitsundays, which is a very beautiful part of the world on the Great Barrier Reef. And, just to give you a little bit of timeline, significant things happened in 2001. God called us to go to Turkey in the heart of the Muslim world. And we all know 2001 was a very interesting year. Talk about, you know, obstacles we had to overcome. And then in 2008, God spoke to us about starting a YWAM base and we in Australia. And we move out to a very expensive part of the world. And some of you remember 2008. Hey, I remember saying, it feels like we're building an ark in a desert. It was such a financially dry time for everybody. And for missionaries, we felt it. And my wife and I remember signing the lease to our property, that, you know, the house that we rented. And we got our support, and it was only going to cover half the month's rent. And I remember calling and crying to, you know, my mom and Lisa. She was on the missions committee at that time and different ones. And just like, oh, this is tough. Anyway, God brought us through that season, and we were able to raise up a great team and a great ministry. And then in 2018, God said, hand it all over. And so we took everything that we've built and everything we created with God, and we handed it over to a young man, I think 26 years old. So a really tough process. As I was, I was 40, you know, and it's just like, I've just built this thing that's just amazing, I'm loving. And then God said, lay it down and give it over to somebody else. It's like, wow, that's tough. You know, it's like you go from running 100 miles an hour to you feel like you're stalled out. You're like, now what, God? And you get the word of the Lord, wait, wait, wait. Hallelujah. For somebody who's used to running, that's a hard thing to do. But God's brought us through a journey, and we knew we were in Australia, and we ended up coming up to YWAM Townsville, where we have the medical ships, and my wife and I have been up there since July last year, serving with them, serving with the ships, have been on the ship, and I'll share a little bit about that, but this is just kind of the journey that God's brought us on. And so when we were working in the Whitsundays, you know, some of you know, we had a huge focus on unreached peoples and unreached nations, and we went to and worked in so many different places, Indonesia, India, China, Turkey, Azerbaijan, different places, and Papua New Guinea and Vanuatu, a lot of places we worked and invested. And now God's brought us here 20 years later. We're now working with these medical ships. So could you just pop that slide of my family? Sorry, Scott. Yes, so I'll just, for those of you who don't know us, and we do have some prayer cards at the back there, please feel free to grab one, pray for us. It's got our email address on there, and also we'll have a thing where you can sign up if you want to get our newsletters and track with us. But this is my wife, Alea. She's from Norway. It's so funny, after my DTS, I went back to YWAM to do a school, and they said, what's your vision for the future? And I said, 5'10" blonde Norwegian girl. And I met her. And I kicked myself. I should have written in there 5'10" blonde rich Norwegian girl. But if I would have known that, God, you know, write the vision clearly, I should have just paid attention to that. And I should have got a few more details in there. Might have made things a little more fun at times. But she's amazing. She's right now in Australia. Both her and I work with the leadership there, and so she's just, you know, we homeschool, she's full-time, serving in the leadership. The other day, you know, while I was doing home groups, she's out taking everybody to do evangelism, and then she's teaching the DTS on intercession, and she just does a lot. She's amazing. Look, we homeschool our four of our kids, so Daniel, he's 15, Josiah's 5, Matthias is 10, Lena's 4, and Mia's 12. And we have just, you might think we're crazy for having 5 kids and doing missions. I don't know. I guess we're just in love with God, and love is kind of crazy. Hey, you just do whatever you want or whatever you can to honor the heart of the one you love, right? And so this is who we are as a family, and we just love it. We love what we do. And so just recently, this photo was taken up on the medical ship. We were up in Papua New Guinea. Our whole family went up, and there's different ones who came to help us with the kids. Which, thank you, George and Jan. Our kids did not learn to swim the hard way. But anyway, I'll just, Scott, if you want to just go to the slide of the campus there. This is where my wife and I are currently based, I guess you could say. Yeah, we're based in Australia, that whole city block there. Is the YWAM campus. It's an incredible location, and it's just right in the heart of the city, about 10 minutes walk from the ocean. Depends on how fast you go. You might be able to do it in 5 if you run. But anyway, we've just taken on another property that's about 200 yards down the road, and we're just expanding and we're growing, because as you hear the heart of God and you get the vision that he has for the nations, it's amazing how many people want to see that and be a part of that. And so our campus there, it's got so many facilities. We got offices, cafeterias. It's just great. And we live on campus there. But in April, we're going to expand our campus even more. We're building 8 apartment units in April. And so that's why my daughter's birthday was this week, and I missed it because I had to get out and do some things. Just, you know, keep our family afloat and try to raise some money and get people supporting us, because we have so much that's on our plate. But we got this building project happening in April. I have a few little flyers left. If anybody wants to come out in April and help us build, paint, do whatever, we need help. And so we're doing this for 3 months from April to July. So feel free to come or see me after the service. But I'll just, it's a quick little video. Scott, if you want to just start the video, just show you a little bit of our campus here. So our campus there, we have, it's a home for our medical ship, and a lot of our, the office and administration happens there. We run discipleship training schools and other schools as well, Introduction to Global Healthcare and Development, and a lot more stuff that's on the radar at the moment. But it's really exciting, and God just brought my wife and I right into the heart of everything there. We've been in relationship with these guys for I don't know how many years. It's been a long, many years. There we also we have a radio station in where we live in North Queensland. It's got the nation's highest rate of self-harm and suicide, and so our radio station, its theme is "It's Good to Be Alive," and so we play music that just celebrates life. Programming is all about celebrating life to combat that challenge that we have up in our area. But it's really amazing how God's positioned us in Townsville as a ministry. We've got many projects going on in Papua New Guinea. The nation of Papua New Guinea is just, man, if you know, when Jesus says, you know, look at the harvest, for the harvest is plentiful, it's like, wow, that is a nation that I've just marvel at what God's doing. And so part of my wife and I, our hearts is transitioning, was saying, well, God, you're opening up doors that I've never seen in missions history, but we're just saying, we're going to go through this door with you, God. And so this is what we've been committed to, and the medical ship, it's a fantastic thing. We have our ship that goes up there 9 to 10 months out of the year, and then it comes back for kind of maintenance and dry docks and different things like that. But our ship will take about 130. We have normally around 115 on the ship. And we provide all kinds of medical services. We have 4 dental chairs on board and ophthalmology. And then we have many medical teams that go out and bless the nation. And why we do this is because Papua New Guinea is one of the hardest nations in the world to get health care to because of its geography and the isolations of all the little islands and mountain ranges. And so what we do is our ship, it has a very low draft, so we can go in, we can go all over the nation, really. But it's really fabulous what happens. We go into a location, and we have these 4 little boats on board, and we send out 5 teams generally every day, 2 that will do primary health care, which will do all kinds of medical services and just really touching people and blessing people. We have optometry team. They go out and they help people get their vision, and, you know, in the sense of giving them glasses and helping them to help screen people for if they need to have any kind of eye surgery, and then they can go for to the eye clinic as well. That's on the ship. And then we also have 2 teams that are community engagement, which has to do with, you know, bringing the gospel and helping people to understand how, well, our motto is John 10:10. Jesus says, I've come to give you life and life to the full. And so we use, biblical worldview to bring across the Father's heart that the Father wants them to have the most wonderful, fruitful life. And so so we do some training and education and just, you know, some basic healthcare things. And we distribute toothbrushes, soap. So what else? Just all kinds of stuff just to help, you know, provide better health care and stuff like that. So that's just a brief thing of what we do on the ship. When it's up there for 9 to 10 months out of the year, we have outreaches that last for 15 days. And so doctors, nurses, church groups, everybody comes on a Friday evening. We generally about 50 or 60, whatever, staff and crew are on board somewhere in there. And then we get that many volunteers come on a Friday night. And Friday night we have a dinner, we do a big orientation on Saturday, and then we start sailing through the night. And we go remote. We don't go where there's any hospitals or anything. We go where there's none of that. And so we go out, and then Monday morning the teams just depart. They go all over, and it's just fabulous. And they come back, you know, every day and out, in and out. Anyway, at the end of the outreach, we come back into town on a Saturday night. Sunday morning, everybody leaves the ship, and we are peeling off sheets and washing blankets, and we're washing cleaning the bathrooms, and then we start emptying, you know, the sewer, and we get fresh fuel on board and all those things, and we get fresh food, and we restock for 4 or 5 days, and then Friday night, new group comes, and we're back out maximizing this amazing gift that God's given us. Okay, so I just want to share with you, if you want to go to that next little video, I'm not going to do a whole presentation on YWAM today, but there's another little video if you want to just go to it. Yeah, this happened while we were up there.
the girl that has walked all the way down from Wanama. If you see how steep it is to walk down that mountain, where literally there's a chain, you have to actually hang onto a chain to come down the mountain. And she's downstairs there with a congenital cataract in her eyes, so God willing, she might be able to see tomorrow.
Lita hasn't seen since 2002 because of extremely dense cataracts in each eye. She's missed out an awful lot of her late adolescence through her 20s, and she underwent cataract surgery. She had a beautiful result, and she said for the first time since 2002 she was able to see. She came to us, you could tell she was down and probably expected a no-go message, and we did her cataract surgery, and for the first time we saw her smile. And other people have seen her in the village since then and say that she smiles even more.
So this is what you're investing into as a church. And so thank you. It's pretty amazing, this story. I remember I just happened to be on shore when this girl came away from her first, you know, they had to do each eye different days. And I remember waiting to get the boat, and she comes off the boat and being able to see out of one eye and watching her walk up the hill by herself. Just wow. You know, and just think about how that impacts not just her, but mom, dad, sister. She now gets to participate in the livelihood of her village. Because Jesus says, I've come to give you life and life to the full. And so, you know, we just, you know, we hear the heart of God and, you know, we respond. And part of hearing the heart of God for us was getting the ship and to step out. And people come with their skills, their talents, you know, their whatever. And this young girl gets to see. It's pretty amazing. And, you know, this is one of, I don't know how many stories. We don't have them all documented. But when we were on the ship, our son Daniel, he got to go with the media team. And it was funny. He just disappeared, you know, go with the media team. They just chase these stories, you know, wherever they may be. And it was really great being on there as a family. So when I was up there, they were asking, they'd ask myself that I would learn to be, if they would train me in being the ship manager and overseeing basically the operation when it's at sea. There's a whole team, obviously, that oversees the entire ship ministry, and we're part of that as well. But when you're at sea, it's like you got to call all the shots, and it's like, wow, such a huge responsibility. And I just laugh because I'm like, from Colorado. You don't know how irritating it is to tell people go to the port side, and they're like, I don't know where it is. I'm like, oh, shoot, maybe it's starboard. Why can't we just use right and left? You know those tongues, those unknown languages? It's on the ship. Okay. But anyway, it's just been a real privilege. And so we spend some time on that. It's not what we do year-round because we usually go up for about 3 months at a time just because it's a pretty full-on, you know, it's from morning until bedtime kind of deal. So you just can't live that way. It's just too much. So it's just done in the seasons. And that's okay because God often works in seasons. And it's important to recognize the season that you're in. So I do want to share a bit of a word. You can put that one photo up, you know, of the bow of the ship or the front of the ship, as I would say. yeah. I want to share this morning out of Luke chapter 5. I apologize, you're probably not going to find this super polished because I've just, all week the Lord has just been giving me word after word, and it's just been so incredible. So I find it fascinating coming here. So I want to pray with people today because there's a lot of stuff just God's been speaking this week, and I don't know if it's, yeah, it was for somebody. So some of it I'll preach and some of it I'll minister to you. But it's just, the heart of God is just so incredible. But in Luke chapter 5, verse 17, it says, one day when Jesus was teaching, and Pharisees and teachers of the law were sitting there, they had come from every village of Galilee, from Judea and Jerusalem. And the power of the Lord was with Jesus to heal the sick. Some men came carrying a paralyzed man on a mat and tried to take him into the house to lay him before Jesus. When they could find no way to do this because of the crowd, they went up on the roof and lowered him on his mat through the tiles into the middle of the crowd, right in front of Jesus. It's a crazy story. I mean, we, you know, just don't think of it, you know, like today. It's just like, imagine Jesus coming to your house, and as Jesus is ministering, some people want to get in and they start taking apart your roof. I mean, kind of crazy. Everybody would be like, yeah, that must be the charismatic group doing that. You know? But, you know, it's like some prophetic act they're doing. No, but, you know, it's like, here's these guys taking apart this roof. And, you know, we think of the story and it's like, whoa, that's cool. Jesus healed the man. But I often think of the homeowner, you know. Think about what he must have been doing. You know, like, what the heck are those idiots doing? I don't know. Chase them off with a baseball bat. I remember when we were in Turkey, we'd have worship in the mornings and at our house. Well, we would rotate homes. And for whatever reason, because it was in homes at 7 in the morning, you've got to be, you know, not too loud, you know, because every, you know, it's apartment buildings. And I remember it was like whenever everybody came to our house, it was like the prophetic expressions came out. I remember like the wall was here and there's a window and this girl decides she needs to go behind the curtain. I don't know if this is an Old Testament prophetic deal or what the heck it was all about, but she goes behind the curtain and she's standing in our window and, you know, there's an apartment right there and she's just standing in front of the window worshiping Jesus. You know, I don't know what she was doing. I just remember walking by the other window and I see my neighbors just staring at my other window. I'm thinking, thank you. And then there's one day this guy decides to do a declaration and sing over the city. And we had a road right in front of the other window. So he stands in front of the window. He opens the window. Music's going on in here. He sticks his head out and he starts singing. I look out the window and everybody's looking up at our house, like, what is that guy doing? I'm thinking about the poor homeowner who's having his roof taken apart. But I think about those guys, and I think, you know, they took a great risk because they knew someone who just needed to have Jesus touch them. You know, and I think about that in our lives, and it's just like, I sometimes think about, you know, when am I taking risk? You know, I'm not saying be an idiot, you know, like do something stupid and foolish. But when are we taking risks to step out and be just a little bit bold, a little bit courageous to bring somebody to Jesus? I'm not saying you have to be an evangelist. I'm just saying. When are we being like these men who say, you know what, this is going to be risky. We're going to take apart this roof, get this man to Jesus. That's wild. It's a wild, wild story. So, yesterday I was driving. And as I was driving, I just felt like the Lord just showed me something. And I was just looking at, you know, you live in Colorado, maybe people come and share this stuff all the time. I don't know. But as I was just driving, I was thinking about, you know, this message and, you know, sharing about, you know, are we willing to take risk to bring people to Jesus? You know, are we willing to step out of our comforts? Are we willing to risk our reputation? You know, I don't want people to think I'm a crazy Christian. You don't have to be a crazy Christian. I was telling somebody this week. I remember being over in Durango many, many years ago, and I was standing in line, and as I was standing in line, the girl in front of me, I just felt like God said, pay for her stuff. And anyway, it was just kind of one of those weird things. Not weird. It was just, you know, one of those God moments. I'm like, all right, God, I can do this. And this girl ended up not having her money. She ran out to the car. She comes back so embarrassed. She doesn't have, and her kids are stressing her out. And anyway, I got ready to go pay for, you know, I just step in there and I said, hey, I said, God speaks to me and he said for me to buy your stuff. And she looked at me. She thought I was a weirdo. I don't even know if she said thank you. She just took off. And I was thinking, man, that stinks. It's like $180 or something. It wasn't like $20 worth of stuff. Could we get a little bit more fruit, God, out of that? Thank you, or smile. And I realized my whole approach was I was trying to be spiritual and say, God spoke to me and said I could have just expressed, you know what, can I just be nice to you? Probably could have had more of a conversation with the woman afterwards rather than her freaking out that I hear voices and she takes off to the parking lot. But see, sometimes we try to over-spiritualize the gospel when the reality is people just are looking for somebody to love them. And as we express the heart of the Father to people, you know, God just does his things. We don't have to be over-spiritual about it. Love goes a real long way. It's pretty simple. And so yesterday, I was just driving around, I just felt like, I was just looking at the mountains, and I felt like God just showed me that there's people who have their vision limited by mountains that are in their lives. And I felt like God was just showing me that had to do, for some people, it had to do with an unbelief and an anxiety. And God wanted to move some of those mountains today that's in your lives. Because he wants you to grab his heart and his vision. And it was just like, I saw that, I was like, okay, God, cool. But it's about the Father's heart being revealed to you. Because he wants you to grab hold of his vision. We've been talking a lot about vision this year. We've been expanding our vision. We've been growing in our vision. We've been trying to hear what God's saying to us. I mean, that's kind of like an ongoing thing in YWAM. I remember going to a conference one time, and it was in Turkey, and this pastor comes to speak to us. And, you know, this is when they had the boom mics, you know. And so he comes to speak, and the boom mic, you know, the boom mic, it's like on an arm. And you can adjust it, and he gets up and gets ready to speak. And as he spoke, the boom mic went like this, and it fell down here. And he says, wow, YWAM, you guys are so big into hearing the vision of God right from the belly. You know, like, you know, the rivers of living water. Okay, come on. Okay, so it was just, but we are a mission that we love to hear the word of the Lord to us, and we're constantly trying to hear it. But in John chapter 15, I'm going to jump around a little bit, but it does have a purpose and a plan of where we're going. But in John chapter 15, we know this passage a lot. Jesus says, I no longer call you servant because a servant does not know his master's business. Instead, I've called you friends. For everything I've learned from my Father, I've made known to you. I no longer call you servants because a servant does not know his master's business. Instead, I've called you friends. Let me say that again. I no longer call you servant because a servant does not know his master's business. Instead, I've called you friends. And one of the things that I find, and we see it so often in the body of Christ, is so many people do not know what the Father's plan or desire is for their life. And so then the question is, how do you see yourself in your relationship with God? Are you a servant or are you a friend? Because if we don't know what the Father's plan is, if we don't know the master's business, then we're coming from a position as a servant and not as a friend. Hello? Is that right? So where are we positioned in our relationship with God? Are we a servant or are we a friend? Now, I'm going to read this out of order. You can send hate mail if you want, I guess. Just address it to my wife. Just kidding. But in verse 14, Jesus says this. He says, you are my friends if you do whatever I command you. Isn't that interesting? You know, sometimes we look at the Father's plans. We're trying to figure out the master's business. And we kind of come to him like a little bit conditionally. We want to say, God, what's your plan for my life? You know, or, you know, I want to do this little thing over here. And we're trying to seek God for all these little details. But I find it so interesting. And, you know, because I love this passage, and you know, you're probably going to be like, oh, the missionaries, they do this all the time. But in Matthew 28, verse 19, we've got to get this. Matthew 28, verse 19 says, all authority in heaven and earth has been given to me. Therefore, go make disciples of all nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father, Son, and Holy Spirit, and teaching them to obey everything I've commanded you. And surely I'm with you always to the very end of the age. I find so many times people, like I speak and get to teach to people all over the world. It's really fun. It's really amazing. I get to raise up young people, but I tell people, when you come to Jesus, you got to come to him and don't bring coming like all conditionally. God, I'll serve you if it's on the worship team. God, I'll serve you if it's, you know, the youth. But don't call me to go to the nations. And we put this limit on God, on what he can reveal to us. And so when we do this, we limit ourselves from being able to hear what the Father's heart is. I grew up here in Pagosa riding my bike. I love Colorado. I had dreams of just hanging out here. I love it. But then God got hold of my heart and started challenging me about missions. And I was like, oh, I don't really care to go anywhere. But I stepped out in faith, and God, I just started to see, like, wow, this is the call of God for my life. And not everybody's called to go overseas. I totally understand that. But we're all called to go make disciples of all nations, baptizing them in the name of Father, Son, and Holy Spirit. And so what we do is when we come to God, we come and we want to put conditions and say, well, God, I'll do this, but I'll only do it in this alleyway, or I'll only do it on this avenue, but we don't come with this open heart. See, when I was young, there was a song that we used to sing, and it's like, all to Jesus I surrender. I don't get paid, so I'm going to sing. You know, all to Jesus I surrender, all to him I freely give. And that's how I was taught to follow Jesus. It wasn't, God, I surrender and I give you this little thing and, you know, I'm going to keep 90% for myself, but here's your 10. It's, God, here is it all. And when we come before God and we can give him our all, and we can say, God, here I am, he can reveal his heart. But if we start to limit to what God, what we want him to do in our lives, he can't reveal his whole plan. Because God's plan for your life is so amazing, and it's so big, and it's so incredible. He wants to reveal these things to you, but your heart has to be positioned in the right place for him to reveal it. Okay. Again, this is the Father's heart. I'm not rebuking in any way. I just saw, like, there's these mountains and it's limiting our vision. We got to, the mountains. Let God get rid of those mountains. And part of that is we've just, you know, we've been discipled and just kind of baptized in a very selfish culture. Hey, our world is very selfish. And we've just had this worldview of just, and then we come to God and we're like, well, I'm giving you this tiny bit. I'm so generous. But he's like, I gave everything for you. And he just wants that same heart, that same kind of reciprocation back to his heart. See, this is the last thing Jesus commanded us to do. And Jesus says, you're my friend if you do what I've commanded you to do. So we need to position ourselves. I always tell young people when I'm teaching them, I was like, the Great Commission is just a yes to God. The details are for you to find out later, but your heart position just needs to be obedience to say, God, I'm available. And whatever the detail is, whether that's Pagosa Springs, Bayfield, Jim Village, New York City, wherever it may be, that's a detail. Whoop-de-doo-dah. Your heart response to the Father is, here I am. You know, this is the last command he said. You know, my mom, many of you know, I remember the last thing I got to see when I was with her, the last thing she said before, I love you, was she sat there in great agony and she was crying and she said, who's going to tell the children about Jesus? That was her concern leaving this earth. And I remember walking out of the room just thinking, man, this sucks. I got to go back to Australia and my mom's passing away. But the last thing she was concerned was, Jeremy, who's going to tell the children about Jesus, the burden that was on her heart? I was like, wow. Stuck with me. Here's Jesus' final wisdom on earth as man, telling the body of Christ, listen, all authority, it's been given to me. Therefore, go, make disciples of all nations. And we were like, whoa, hold on, God. I want this in my context. I want this how it makes me comfortable. So glad Jesus didn't take the comfortable way out. As he's there in the garden praying, and as he's praying, his sweat comes like blood. He's under so much stress knowing about what is about to happen. So glad he didn't put conditions on the Father to his obedience. Man, so amazing, his commitment towards us. It's amazing. You know, I look at his commitment towards me, and I just think, how can I not just respond with, I'll give you everything? It's like any relationship. Hey, I have an amazing wife, an amazing relationship with her, but the more I commit to her, the greater it gets. My relationship with God and the call that he gives me, the more I commit, the greater it gets. I've had disappointments, I've had hard times, but I've never regretted obeying God. Never. How can you? How can you regret obeying God? He's so good. I felt like God was saying, you know, just yesterday, just these three words came across me as I was just praying, and it was, you know, the rest, you know, some people have been resting, but in your resting, you've fallen asleep, and it's time to awake. Those are the three things. It was rest, asleep, awake. I'm not saying that's everybody. I'm just saying that this is what, you know, I just felt like this word was stirring in my heart, and I just want to encourage whoever that's for. You might have been resting and resting, and now you've fallen asleep, but it's time to wake up to the things that God's got for you. Wake up. Again, this isn't a rebuke at all. It was just such, it's been such a fun week with God this week, hearing the things that he wants to deposit this morning. So please don't take this as, oh, Jeremy's just passionate and screaming and yelling at us. I don't normally preach this way, but when I come to Pagosa, it's my inheritance, my family. You know, I'm from here. This is my well to come and drink and to participate in. And so when I come, it's like God gives me stuff that I normally don't do it like this, okay? So if you think I'm a jerk, I'm not always this way, okay? But it's just, this is my home and this is my inheritance, you know, and I've got a few of those places around the world. And I love this community. I love what God's doing here. In Acts, this was another thing that God was just stirring in my heart this week. I was just like, God, I'm not a Bible teacher. I just impart the heart of God to people, and I just try to do, you know, just be obedient. But this word came to me this week, and it was Acts chapter 2, verse 17. We like this. Hey. And it says, in the last days, God says, I'll pour out my spirit on all people. Your sons and daughters will prophesy. Your young men will see visions. Your old men will dream dreams. I'm just going to stop it there. I'll pour out my spirit on all people. Your sons and daughters will prophesy. Your young men will see visions. Your old men will dream dreams. And I was just trying to, like, you know, trying to tap into God and saying, what's this all about? You know, like, got all these different words and, you know, and I just look at Pagosa, and I look at what God's doing here with Restoration Fellowship. And it's so cool to see what God's doing here with all of the different generations. And I just thought it was really interesting because, you know, you have the generation there that's your sons and daughters will prophesy. You know, and it's like that prophetic word is kind of like the word that kind of breaks through. Hey, it's the word that launches things, and people are like, yep, we got to get going there, you know? Or it brings that correction. There's a lot of things that the prophetic word does. But we kind of lump all these things into one kind of category. You know, the visions, the dreams, and the prophecy. We just say, oh, it's all the prophetic, you know. But it's interesting, and I'm not saying that this is always a formula or anything, but I just felt like it was just something that God was just wanting to encourage you. And it was like, you know, there's going to be that, those words and that prophecy that comes from your sons and your daughters. And then there's the young men, and they see visions. And I find it interesting. In my life, when I get a vision, you know, it's kind of like you start to see a little bit more of the details, okay? The prophetic word's kind of like releasing people in that place of obedience and let's go, okay? But then it's like the vision is kind of like spilling out a little bit more of the details because you start to see the vision. You're like, yeah, this is what we're supposed to do. And then it's like the dreams. And this is talking about the old men. I won't ask you to raise your hand here. And this isn't just genders. Specific, but it's interesting. The dreams. I'm like, what's that about? I mean, I'm not a Bible teacher. I just try to get the heart of God, and I'm just like, what's that about? Dreams. And I know, you know, we got the Old Testament to dig into and look at all the stories of dreams. But one of the things I find about dreams, I'm like, why is God talking about the old men and their dreams? Something I find very interesting as I get older, in my journey with God as I get older, I start to comprehend more and more of the Father's heart and his character. And I find that when I get a dream, his, you know, it's like when you get a prophecy, it's like a kind of like that declaration of breakthrough into the spirit realm or into people's minds and hearts. And then there's a vision which spells out those details. But the dreams, it's revealing the Father's heart and what he wants to really achieve. And I just felt like there was this real challenge stirring up in my heart this week as I read that, that for those of you who are old men, you need to make sure that the character and the nature of God is being imparted into every vision that comes through here. Cha-ching. Okay? Because you've walked with God and you've seen God's faithfulness towards you for so many years and so many, you know, decades and generations, you've seen it. And you need to bring that wisdom of the Father's heart into the young men and women who are getting the dreams, the visions, and the prophecies. Okay? You need to help correct. You need to help steward them in that. Okay? It's just a little challenge. It's a good one. You okay with that? Yeah? Okay, good. If you're not okay with it, that's okay too. Eat the meat, spit out the bones, but I like my meat. Okay. You know, in Genesis chapter 11, like I said, we're a little all over the place, but there's a purpose. Like I said, I just felt like, you know, this is the Father's heart. It's just like, I feel like there was just several different things. I'm like, God, this is like a teaching that goes all over the place. But it's the Father's heart because he's going to minister. Some of these things are for just individuals and some of these are for different groups or whatever. I don't know, but you take it and run with it. But, you know, I'm a missionary, and this whole story in the Bible in Genesis chapter 11 has just been a real interesting one for me because I've lived in Turkey, and I had to learn Turkish, and I remember investing so much money and so many hours trying to learn a foreign language. And I remember being discouraged, saying, God, you've called me to come live here. You've called me to come be with these people. And I can't even speak to them. Like, my heart is burdened. I've left my family. I've given up the opportunity to chase a career, to do money, all that stuff. I said, God, and you've called me here to be with these people. And I can't even speak to them. And I tried over and over and learning, and I don't have the gift of languages. Some people do, and they're irritating. But I remember being so burdened with this, I cried out to God. I said, God, take my English and give me Turkish. I don't care if I ever speak to my family again. I need to reach these people. It was a trade I was willing to make. It was a prayer. I don't know how that lines up theologically. Da, 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 da. I don't know. It was just the cry of my heart. I just wanted to reach them. I wanted to share the love of God with them freely and not have it sound like a two-year-old trying to talk. And I remember this challenge. I was just like, God, this is so tough. And this story in the Bible. Got this Norwegian wife and in-laws who ask me every time I see them, so when are you going to learn Norwegian? I've been trying. Kick a man while he's down. So I've had to try to learn two different languages. And now we're engaging up into Papua New Guinea. And you want to learn? It's called talk pissing. I thought they were swearing at me the first time. I was like, what? But they're like, you want to learn talk pissing? And I'm like, that's the language. I'm like, oh, here we go again. Thank you, Jesus. I know some of you have the answer. Just pray like Pentecost and get the tongue. Done there, been there, done that, didn't work. I know, I didn't have the right faith. I don't know. It just hasn't come. But you got this story in Genesis chapter 11. And I remember reading it and just, I've been frustrated with God over this passage as a missionary. As one who's been, the challenges, the sacrifices I've made to want to see people have the gospel. And sometimes the biggest challenge is language. And you got this passage in the Bible. Look at it. Now the whole world had one language and a common speech. Oh, Jesus, if we could be there then. No, I don't want to be there then. Okay. As people move eastward, they found the plain of, oh, here we go in tongues, Shinar. And I always tell people, if you want to learn to pray in tongues, just read the Old Testament out loud. It's just like, okay. They found a plain in Shinar and settled there. And they said to each one, come, let's make bricks and make them thoroughly. They used bricks instead of stone and tar for mortar. And then they said, come, let us build ourselves a city with a tower that reaches to the heavens so that we may be able to make a name for ourselves. Otherwise, we'll be scattered all over the face of the whole earth. And we know the rest of the story, how God creates the different languages at this time of history. It's pretty interesting. And I'm looking at the whole Great Commission. I've said yes to this Great Commission so many times in my life. Been willing to, yeah, I hope I've been willing to follow God in every situation. Some are not so easy all the time. Sometimes you wonder if you've missed certain things, but anyway, you try. The hard attitude is to say yes. The details you try to figure out as you go sometimes. But the heart is positioned to say yes to the Great Commission. So, you know, here God just, you know, deals with the Tower of Babel and he scatters the people with all these different languages. You know, and I'm sitting there like, God, this would have made our job a heck of a lot easier had you not done this. Have you ever had these conversations with God? It's like, why? Why, God? Why did you do this? I mean, they're just building a tower to reach the heavens. I mean, think about it. It's not like crazy. I mean, they're like, yeah, let's see if we can reach God. Let's build this tower in a crazy pursuit. And God wasn't too impressed. They said, come, let us build ourselves a city with a tower that reaches to the heavens so that we can make a name for ourselves. And they said, otherwise we'll be scattered over the face of the whole earth. And God wasn't happy with that. And everybody was like, God, why did you do this? If everybody spoke, you know, if we all spoke Hebrew or whatever, I don't care, Chinese, you know, English, whatever. If we all had a common language, this gospel would be so much easier to get out. And then I looked, and God just showed me, and it was just like, in Genesis chapter 9, there's a big story that takes place. The Sunday school might be learning about it right now, about the man Noah. And he builds this ark, and he's faithful to God. And he comes through, and as he comes through, God makes a covenant with Noah. And it says in Genesis chapter 9, verse 1, it says, and then God blessed Noah and his sons, saying to them, be fruitful and increase in number and fill the earth. See, what happened with the guys at Babel was they decided to settle. They stopped and they did not listen to the wisdom of God here when God told Noah and his family, you go fill the earth. Because he wanted his glory and his name and his reputation to be filled all over the earth. And then you have generations later who say, no, let's settle here. And they settle and they stop the glory of God from being able to go all over the earth. And God says, no, that's not what it's about. So he decides to scatter them. And now we have all these languages. Pretty interesting. So I look at this and I think about, you know, here we are at this time in history. You know, this morning, I want to share just, you know, we've been talking a lot about vision lately. I don't know, 2020, it's all probably, I haven't heard what's been coming out of America. And I'm sure a lot of stuff on vision, just the word 2020 or the TV show. I don't know. I don't even know if that's still around. Anyway, we don't have American TV. Anyway. But we've been talking a lot about vision. You know, where there's no vision, people perish. You know, and I think about that for us, and I think about, you know, are we perishing if we don't have vision? If we don't have God's vision, hey. We start to perish. We start to settle. We start to sleep. Hey, got to get God's vision for our lives. And again, to me, the way I get God's vision, you know, I always tell young people that, you know, young people love their songs, and I like songs too, but I've been telling people, man, the most powerful worship times I'll have is at a coffee shop with my Bible, my heart postured to God saying, what do you want to do? It's the most powerful worship. I just, oh man, it's just so powerful. I love just getting in that place saying, God, let's dream. What's your vision? What's your vision for these people? What do you want to do here? And he starts to speak and cultivate that in me. It's such an amazing time of worship. Because I just, my definition of worship comes out of Genesis 22 when Abraham and Isaac went up the hill. And Abraham tells his men, he says, we're going to go worship. He says, we will worship. What was Abraham going to do? He was going to make a sacrifice. What was Isaac going to do? He was going to make a willing surrender. Because he was a teenage boy. Abraham was an old man. They just hiked a mountain. Trust me, Isaac could have got away. He willingly surrendered. And so that was to me, it's like such a definition of worship in my life. And I just love saying, God, what can I surrender and how can I, you know, what can I sacrifice? It's not about, you know, Jesus was the ultimate sacrifice. Yes, I get that. But you know what? I can let go of things so that I can achieve God's purposes and his heart for me and the nations. So anyway, just a little bit of encouragement there. But I hope this has been encouraging for you this morning. Like I said, it's a few things have just been kind of shooting from here to there and there. But I always tell people, like, I get stressed when people want notes a week in advance because I pray up until, like, I mean, I sometimes write a sermon notes as, like, I come up here, like, people are introducing me, and I'm, like, getting these words. it's like, oh, because sometimes God just wants us to reveal his heart a little raw and not polish it up and just, and so, I mean, I prepare way in advance, but I give God up until, even while I'm speaking, to reveal his heart. And I've had to learn how to discern that and walk with that, but that's okay. So God doesn't want us to settle. He doesn't want us just to get comfortable and kick back. He wants us to pursue him. Pursue the vision he has for your life. He's got it. You've heard me say this millions of times probably, if you've been here over the last 20 years. But, you know, God's thoughts towards man outnumber the grains of sand on the earth. There's some pretty detailed vision out there for you if we go after it. And the reason, you know, he has this is because he's thought a lot about you. He celebrated your birth, your conception, your whole journey. He's just been so anxious for this season of your life and this moment. And he wants to release those things. But, you know, what I find with God is I just have to position my heart in the most appropriate way. You know, he's not going to call me to something I don't want to do all the time. You know what I mean? Like, so many people are afraid to ask God, God, what do you want to do? Because they're afraid that God's going to torture them for the rest of their life and give them something miserable to do. I didn't get that version of the Bible. My version of the Bible shows that we've got a good father who just loves his children. And, yeah, there's hard times and there's challenges, but the end goal is pretty awesome. It's pretty good. And I can trust him in that. So, this morning, I just want to close in prayer. And I, if it's okay, I don't know if there's any more formalities we need to do, but at some time I'm happy to pray with people. But I felt like today, too, there was the story of Jehu. And some of you might remember Jehu in the Bible. He's just kind of sitting around with his friends. He's commander of the Lord's army. Elijah comes up to him and says, hey, I'm going to anoint you king. And he's sitting around, and the prophet comes, gives him the word of the Lord, you're king. I love that. That'd be so cool to go home to your wife and be like, hey, I'm the king. That'd be pretty cool. Anyway, but I felt like God is just, you know, there's some of you who you're just sitting around at this moment and of your life, and God wants you to hear the word of the Lord. It's time to step up. It's time to lead. It's time to create. And so I'm not saying that I have those words for you, so don't come up here thinking I'm going to give everybody a prophetic word. we'll give it a go. But, I mean, that's how we position ourselves, right? But what I want you to do is just to position yourself to say, God, I'm willing to listen to whatever. You know, Jehu recognized the prophet, and he said, look, let's go to the back room. And he takes him to the back room and anoints him king. He hears the word of the Lord for his life and he steps out. I find it so amazing. Young people, listen to this message. Jehu's character and his obedience before his men, they immediately turned around and they worshiped him or served him as king. They didn't say, no, you're not talented enough. No, you're a jerk on Friday nights. They immediately honored him and they followed him as king. He lived his life in a position that was worthy to be king. So when the word came, he was ready. Find so many people are wanting to wait for the word and then they'll get their act together. It'll be way too late. Get your act together now. Carry yourselves now. Because when the word comes to you and it starts to release you, you need that maturity. Okay? So thank you.